Hi there, you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ, it's great to have you here with me today. Before I get to the rest of today's episode, I'd like to give my usual customary shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games at ggportland.com. The topic of today's episode is going to be vastly different than the vast majority of episodes I have on this podcast. Most of the time, I do the What I Like About series, where I talk about things that I like about Magic the Gathering in general, mostly in the commander format, certain cards, strategies, things like that. But instead, I was inspired to do today's episode from the relative popularity of my episode on the Reserved List. And if you don't know what the Reserved List is, I suggest you go take a quick listen to my episode on the Reserved List from a few months ago, and then you can come right back and pick up where you left off. The year 2020 can be defined in many different ways, and I'm not here to debate how that year went. Instead, I was very intrigued by all the buyouts that were occurring of Reserved List cards over the last 6 to 9 months after the beginning of the COVID pandemic last March. And it got me inspired to start taking a look at the card prices of my Reserved List cards, or the cards that I have in my collection currently, to see if they've gone up in value since I first procured them. And it got me wondering if I took a look at the prices now, and if potentially there would be major increases, or no change at all, in the next 6 to 12 months. The rules of this thought experiment were simple. I selected 5 cards out of my collection that are all located on the reserve list, and I decided to utilize the market price available on TCG Player the day I'm recording this, January 4th, 2021, as the baseline price. I intend to return to this list in 6 months, say June or July of this year, and hopefully December of this year, to see if there's been any change in the market price on TCG Player of these cards. I'm going to give you a quick rundown of the 5 cards that I have selected from my collection and tell you a little bit about what I think about these cards and why they're so great. I wanted to start this episode by looking at Demonic Hordes, a demon summon card that was included way back in Magic's first set, Alpha, back in 1993. Demonic Hordes is a demon for 3 black, black, black. It is a 5/5 creature with a tap ability to destroy one land. And a very peculiar upkeep cost here, it's pay black, black, black during your upkeep or the Hordes become tapped and you lose a land of opponent's choice. So again, I obviously wasn't playing Magic back when this was legal. And, I mean, again, it's legal in all formats, but back when it would have been most prevalent. Because, again, this would be a very interesting card in land destruction builds in black. Again, you can tap this to destroy one land of any of your choice. If you're running in colors like blue that have a lot of untap effects, you can tap the Demonic Hordes quite a bit to be able to destroy quite a few lands. And, again, that upkeep cost of triple black during your upkeep could be a rather major issue to have to overcome, depending on where you are in the game. But again, it's a 5/5 for 6 with triple black in the casting cost, so again, you're probably not going to be able to get this out on turn 1 or 2. So hopefully you'll be able to have some ways to be able to untap this creature, be able to destroy a whole bunch of lands, and then be able to rinse and repeat. However, again, in the Commander format, where mass land destruction is typically not something a lot of playgroups really favor, I don't think Demonic Hordes really sees a whole ton of play. Again, I could be wrong, but EDH Rec doesn't have it included in all that many decks on the website. Currently, the revised edition of the Demonic Hordes, which is what I'm holding in my hand right now, has a TCG market price of $4.93. It's actually much higher than I would have expected, given this card and the little bit of play that it receives, but also I'm interested in seeing if there will be some kind of buyout on this card going forward, given the fact that it has not been printed in a legal set since revised. The second card for today is Lodestone Bauble, a zero-cost artifact from all the way back in the Alliances set, back from 1996. Lodestone Bauble is a zero-cost artifact, and it says you can pay one and tap Lodestone Bauble and sacrifice Lodestone Bauble to put up to 4 target basic lands from any player's graveyard on top of his or her library in any order. That player draws a card at the beginning of the next turn's upkeep. I originally purchased this card 5-6 months ago, I want to say, when I was trying to build my first landfall deck using the new Rada Heart of Keld. And I was curious about this card because I figured that if I had some lands in my graveyard for any reason, I would potentially be able to bring some of them back and put them right back on top of my deck to add some more fuel to the deck and make sure that I'd be guaranteed to draw lands every turn using Rana's ability to put them onto the field as quickly as possible. And what's interesting about this card is you can just play it right away. It can sit there for several turns, and then you can sacrifice it and get those basic lands back on top of your deck, and it also allows you to draw one of them back if you choose yourself as the target player. However, something interesting about this card also is that it says any player's graveyard. So technically, you could choose an opponent if you're afraid about their top decks, especially if they're doing something like Yuriko, the Tiger's Shadow, Scroll Rack, Sensei's Divining Top, something like that, where you might be able to stick a couple of lands on top of their deck and try to script their strategy so that they don't draw into the gas that they may have on top of their deck. So it seems like a very interesting way to maybe mess with your opponents as well as potentially improve any basic land builds that you may have. I also have a Titania, Protector of Argoth deck that this would actually work quite well in, although it hasn't made the cut quite yet because I haven't exactly found a whole lot of great reasons to include this card, but it's definitely something that was right on the bubble of that deck when I first completed it. I paid about 90 cents or so for this card when I purchased it. It is currently valued on TCG at $2.68. With the recent release of the Commander Collection Green Collection, a lot of EDH players have been able to get their hands on Sylvan Library much cheaper than previously. But there's also a card on the reserved list that has a similar effect for top deck manipulation and choice. This is an enchantment from all the way back in the Mirage block called Preferred Selection. It's an enchantment for 2 green-green, and it reads, at the beginning of your draw phase, look at the top 2 cards of your library and choose one. Put that card, so the card you chose, on the bottom of your library, or sacrifice Preferred Selection, and pay 2 green-green, so the card's casting cost, to draw the card. Again, while it's not nearly as good as Sylvan Library, because again, you can pay life for Sylvan Library, whereas this you have to have 4 mana up, or the 4 mana that you want to pay during your upkeep. It's also an extremely good complementary effect to that deck, or to any green deck that wants some card selection, because you're able to choose which one of the top 2 cards you want to be able to put in your hand, and you can either scry the other one to the bottom, or you can put it in your hand for a cost. Again, this is not anywhere near as good as Sylvan Library, because you don't get to look at that third card especially, and you don't get to pay life to be able to put that card in your hand. But, especially in some mono-green decks where you don't always have a whole lot of card selection, or really none at all, this is a very interesting option to be able to look at if you need a little bit more card selection, or you find yourself dealing with a whole lot of dead draws, and you don't have a whole lot of ways to be able to scry cards to the bottom that you don't want. This card is currently retailing on TCG Market for about $1.46. The next card on the list is the newest of the set, but also comes with a major caveat. I'm talking about Metalworker, an extremely popular card for all artifact builds. This card was released in the Urza's Destiny block back in Urza's Destiny set back in 1999, and the regular version of this currently retails for over $100, or you know somewhere around $100. It's been the focus of a lot of buyouts lately because it is such a powerful card and is on the reserve list. But I'm talking about the 2000 John Finkel CE version, the gold border version that is not tournament legal. Again, I spent about $10 10 months or so ago, on this card to be able to pick it up to put it in my Alayla Artful Provocateur deck. It's based around artifacts and enchantments. And this card is an extremely important piece of that deck because it provides me extra mana. Metalworker is a 1/2 artifact creature for 3, and says tap. Reveal any number of artifact cards in your hand. Add 2 colorless mana to your mana pool for each card revealed this way. This is an extremely important part of my Alayla deck because I'm able to show 1, 2, 3 artifact cards from my hand and be able to get 2, 4, maybe 6 mana, colorless again, for my turn to maybe be able to play some of those cards or play something else in my hand. And that's a really nice tempo piece when you can drop this on turn 2 or 3 and be able to start getting fast mana. And yes, while it is colorless and it is a 3-color deck, you are able to play artifacts with that colorless mana, so it's really not much of a downside. It's basically all upside, and there's a reason why this card's regular version has been the focus of such a concentrated buyout over the last 6 to 9 months. This version of Metalworker, the gold-bordered CE version from 2000, currently retails on the TCG Marketplace for $17.51. The last card that I wanted to talk about today is also a commander option, again from the Alliances block, Lord of Tressorhorn. Lord of Tressorhorn is a legend that costs 1 Grixis, so blue, black, red, and he's a 10-4 creature. And he has a very interesting casting, or set of casting requirements. When Lord of Tressorhorn comes into play, you as the player pay 2 life and sacrifice 2 creatures. And a target opponent, again, opponent of your choice, gets to draw 2 cards. Effects that prevent or redirect damage, so again, this is the paying the 2 life, cannot be used to counter this loss of life. And he also has an ability for a black to regenerate himself. Now, I have actually built a Lord of Tressorhorn deck way back, let's say last June of 2020 or so. And I can proudly say that I got completely smoked in a one-on-one game with this card. But I was able to at least cast him one time. So I feel like I was able to get the moral victory even though my deck was a piece of trash and I tore it apart immediately after the game. But I was able to prove that I had been able to utilize him as a commander for one game, even though the deck really didn't jive with what I was looking to do. But it is interesting to be able to look at this as a Voltron strategy. Again, it's an extremely difficult strategy to be able to play because even though his casting cost is relatively low, even though it is 3 colors, it's only 4 of total mana to be able to cast him the first time, but you also have to have at least 2 creatures besides him on the battlefield when you try to cast him because you have to sacrifice those creatures. So all of a sudden you start looking into having some sort of token producer or some value creatures around him that you can sacrifice to be able to get him on the field. Again, the 2 life that you have to pay isn't a whole lot of... it really isn't a huge difficulty, especially with the new Lisa Shroud of Dusk that came out in the Commander Legends set that allows you to pay life instead of commander tax to be able to bring her out. So this isn't all that far off from there. And you unfortunately also have to give a target opponent 2 cards, so you could use this card politically to be able to give someone 2 free cards if they let you cast this guy. And he does have a regenerate ability, which is nice if you're trying to go for a Voltron strategy where you're going to be trying to swing in for combat damage. Again, he has 10 power, so if you can buff him up even 1, all of a sudden you put one of your opponents on a 2-turn clock, and that can be extremely scary in the right build. But again, there are so many hurdles to overcome on this one, that it's a very difficult deck to build, and definitely not something I'm really keen to go back to, but it is interesting to be able to have a little bit of first-hand experience regarding what this card can do and really trying to figure out how you build a deck around it. This card currently is on the TCG Marketplace at $4.71. I also wanted to do a single bonus card outside my list for a friend of mine who has a very interesting card as a commander option in his collection from the reserved list. I'm talking about Krovax the Cursed. Currently valued at just under $5, Krovax has actually been the focus of a very targeted buyout the last couple of months from what I've heard. Again, I'm not an expert on the MTG finance world, and I do not pretend to be, but I have heard that this card has experienced significant price growth lately, and it'll be interesting to see if it continues to go up in price going forward. So those were the 5 cards plus the 1 bonus card that I'm going to be taking a look at for the next 6 to 12 months to see if they go up in price due to some reserved list buyout trends that have been occurring since about the middle of last year. And again, I'm not saying these cards are going to go up, down, or do absolutely nothing in value. I'm just speculating on these, and mostly I'm just curious to see what happens given recent buyout trends for other cards on the reserved list. And again, these are not cards that are overly expensive. There are plenty of cards on the reserved list that are worth over $50 or hundreds or even thousands of dollars currently. And again, I don't own any of those cards, and I probably won't because that's a lot more money than I want to spend on a single Magic card. But it's also interesting just to see how low-cost cards can go up in price. Again, I'm going to bring up my Lodestone Bauble. I paid less than $1 for it, and it's already marketing for almost $3 in the last few months. So again, that's just a case of cards going up in price over time. Again, it's not a huge jump, really. It's not going from 15 cents to $10 or anything. But it is interesting to see those trends over time to see if the prices of those cards go up. And Again, if you are interested in picking up some of these cards, you can go over to TCG Player and put them into the search box. And again, these prices are mostly for near mint or very lightly played cards. Again, I am a fan of picking up damaged or heavily played cards because those cards also need to be in a good collection. So I always look to try to be able to get damaged or heavily played cards because they are the best value. So if you're interested in picking up some of these cards, definitely go over to TCG Player, Cardsphere, Card Kingdom, anywhere where fine cards are sold, and just make sure to support your local LGS or another LGS through one of these great websites. All right, that about wraps it up. You've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. I'm your host, MJ. Thanks for listening to me. Have a good one. And you can find me on Twitter at MTG in Quarantine. And you can also find my back catalog of podcast episodes on Spotify, Google Casts, Apple Podcasts, and other places where fine podcasts can be found. Have a great rest of your day.